Welcome to Casting Hope, a sermon podcast of Hope Presbyterian Church in Columbus, Ohio. My name is Joe Hack, pastor at Hope, and we are so glad that you are listening in. We would love to connect with you in person at our Sunday gathering. In the meantime, we hope this message points you to Jesus, the reason we gather.
Well, I've shared this before, but whenever I watch sports, I assume the worst about my team. It's this coping mechanism that I think I got passed down to me from my own dad, because I hate the experience of letdown. Anyone else? I hate the experience of letdown, and so this brilliant coping mechanism of mine is that if you expect the worst, then you will never be let down. So that's what I do. It's genius, in my opinion. But it also means my family, and especially my wife, hate watching sports with me because I'm so negative and I'm not expecting. In fact, if I am expecting, I'm expecting the worst. I think we all do this as I reflect on this, because not just with sports, but in all of life, we all do this because nobody likes the experience of letdown, especially when we are vulnerable enough to be expected. We've all been let down way too many times. And so we no longer live expectantly. In our relationships. In our job, maybe. In our friendships. Especially in church. We no longer come expectant. Or if we do come expectant, it's for the worst. I've heard somebody describe what can come over me often, which is the spirit of Eeyore. You know Eeyore, Winnie the Pooh? You know Eeyore, Winnie the Pooh? The only thing that Eeyore expects is the worst. And over the years, my own counselor has noticed an Eeyorean sort of impulse in my heart. This Eeyorean trend in my soul, and here's how it goes. It goes like this. I get excited, and I even express excitement about something God is doing in my life or in the life of those around me, and I share this expectancy, and then like this, Eeyore walks into me and embodies me, and then I suddenly say, but, and I shift, and I assume the worst. And I assume that the story that God is writing is not good. And I lose my expectancy with it. Well, we've been walking through the Gospel of Luke as a church, one section at a time. And this morning we just heard read aloud a passage that I would invite you to turn to. We also will show it on the screen. But if you have your Bibles, you can turn to Luke 8, verse 40. And in this passage that we just heard, I actually see this Eeyorean sort of turn, this expectancy to pessimism movement on display. So if you notice right away in verse 40, the crowd was expectant. In verse 40, when Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him, for they were what? They were all expecting him. They knew, they had heard that Jesus was a healer, that Jesus was special. And here we meet right away in verse 41 a man named Jairus, who's a synagogue leader. And this Jairus has a daughter, a 12-year-old daughter, who is dying. And so Jairus, along with this crowd, are full of expectation. But if you fast forward to the very end of our passage, verse 49, what do we see? We see these words. Don't bother. The crowd moves from expectancy to don't bother. And how can this crowd move from such expectation to such pessimism in such a short amount of time? Well, if you look, and we're going to, at what happens in between these two passages, it actually makes sense. So that in verse 41, Jairus, falls at Jesus' feet in desperation. He came and fell at his feet. Why? Well, because his 12-year-old daughter is dying. And we're all curious, as we're reading this text, if Jesus is going to answer his plea, his prayer. And the first six words following his plea are promising. It says, as Jesus was on his way. As Jesus was on his way. And so the plea is, come and heal. And we see right away that Jesus does answer the plea. And he follows Jairus to his house on his way. Consider just for a second, slow down as you enter this story. Enter into Jairus. Experience the expectancy that he must be experiencing. The hope that's rushing up. Here is Jesus who's walking beside me back to my house with my 12-year-old daughter. There's an expectancy here. But then, if you look at verse 42, at what follows, things get complicated, don't they? Because it says, as Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. So, right away, we get indication that this isn't going to be a smooth and uncomplicated answer to prayer. This isn't going to be an uncomplicated journey to healing because there are now people in the way. Why can't our walk with Jesus just be the first half of this verse? Jesus went on his way to answer what we were praying for. Why does there have to be things that get in the way? Why can't Jesus answer our prayers the way that we would? In the timing that we prefer? An unseen woman interrupts Jesus. It interrupts Jairus' prayer. It interrupts Jairus' hope. It interrupts Jairus' expectancy. She's not a young daughter dying at age 12, but someone who has been a kind of living dead person for 12 years. Why do I say a living dead person? Well, because socially she has been exiled. The bleeding that she experiences is, in her society, a social death, a kind of living death. But in her desperation, she boldly approaches Jesus, and Jesus heals her. But in this case, Jesus is not okay with an anonymous healing. It says in verse 44 that she came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak. In verse 45, Jesus says, "Who touched me?" What's going on? Well, Jesus wants this woman's faith to be publicly seen, publicly vindicated, maybe even tested. But in her vindication, with a cloud of witnesses, with all of her city around her, he asks who touched them. And they all deny it, says. Verse 45, they all deny it, including her. Well, like Peter's denials later, Jesus extends mercy to this woman and asks again. And this time, what happens? She rises up, she confesses her faith before all, but in the only safe place that she can do it. Verse 47, the feet of Jesus. So let's review. Jesus, who is on his way to heal a 12-year-old daughter, is approached by an unseen woman who has been dead for 12 years, socially speaking, who is nobody's daughter. And Jesus not only heals her body, but he heals her exile. He says, your faith has healed you. And then he says, daughter. And so Jesus was on his way to answer Jairus' desperate prayer, but takes a detour. And it's a beautiful detour. It's a stunning detour. But it's a detour all the same. Because Because the very next verse, things get dark in verse 49. When Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader, and said, "Your daughter's dead. Don't bother the teacher anymore." So again, the expectancy that we saw in the crowd at the beginning is now sinking into pessimism. Don't bother. And then it just sinks into outright disgust. Jesus said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid, just believe. She'll be healed." And when you arrive at the house of Jairus, you don't let anyone go in except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. Meanwhile, all the people were wailing and mourning for her. Jesus said, "Stop wailing. She's not dead, but asleep." And they laughed. Now, this is not having a laugh with Jesus. It's the way we might laugh off somebody who's being what we think is naive to our deep pain. When people say hopeful things to us in our deepest pain, we might laugh them. Maybe not in front of them, or perhaps in front of them. And so we shouldn't be too harsh in judging this crowd, should we? Because the crowd, I think, illustrates a familiar pattern in our soul. Just consider this. How many times have we moved from expectancy with Jesus to laughing? I mean, how many times have we moved from expecting to expecting much? We risk vulnerability with Jesus or with the Jesus community we're in, and then he disappoints us. So we say to ourselves and we say to others, "Don't bother, don't bother, don't bother." And in the most raw times, perhaps even in our prayers, we laugh. We're not laughing with him. Or we send his messengers of hope away. Things are just too raw. But I want to notice something else in our text, because what we've been doing so far is highlighting the crowd's attitude this whole time. But their approach is not the only response to Jesus in this text. So I wonder if you noticed Jairus' own response in this text. And even the unnamed and unseen woman's response in this text. What is their response to the hope that Jesus brings? Well, here's the thing. They're not laughing at Jesus' feet. What they're doing is they are falling at Jesus' feet. What I meant to say is they're not laughing at Jesus' feet. Face, they're falling at Jesus' feet. And there's a humility there. There's even a humble expectancy in this posture. Things are not okay. But their impulse is to fall in humility at the feet of Jesus. Now, I'm told humble comes from the word relating to ground. So they stay low to the ground and they stay expectant even though they don't have the answers. And even though things are not unfolding in the way that they wanted to, and they both, though, stay there. They stay there at the feet of Jesus. As scholar Joel Green helped me see, they fall from two very different places in their society. Jairus, who's a leader, a synagogue leader, falls down at Jesus' feet. And this unnamed and unseen woman falls up at Jesus' feet. What do I mean? Well, I want to explore that with the rest of our time. We begin with Jairus, who falls down at Jesus' feet. Jairus is a synagogue leader. And in that culture, that may not mean much to us, but in that culture, that means he was very high and very powerful. But this man, again, is brought low. He's brought very low by tragedy. And instead of this tragedy hardening him, it seems to soften him, doesn't it? And he does something extremely unexpected, then as today. He falls down. He falls down at the feet of Jesus. And then what happens? Well, remember, his prayer got sidelined. What happens is astonishing to me is that this does not result in him getting mad at the woman who interferes with his prayer request. And he does not get cynical with his friends who laugh off Jesus and his promises. They say, don't bother. They laugh at Jesus' face. But Jairus, verse 50. Jesus says, don't be afraid. Just believe. And she will be healed. And when he arrived at the house of Jairus, he did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. And so Jairus' wife too. What's happening? He not only fell at the feet of Jesus, but now he is following Jesus into his own house. Jairus, again, he's a leader in this culture. And he shows us, I think, what true leadership looks like. Leaders stay close to the feet of Jesus. Jairus falls down and follows Jesus' own feet. Even when Jesus' feet do unexpected things or take unexpected turns. It goes on a timeline that we would never choose. Jairus never forces the issue. He simply resolves to follow Jesus' feet and then to follow those same feet wherever they go. This is astonishing in this cultural moment because we have been hearing throughout the Luke of Gospel at how religious leaders act and behave. So we've been sort of taught by Luke to expect something from a synagogue leader, or from a Pharisee, or a Sadducee, or a leader in the law. And instead we see somebody going completely off script and falling at the feet of Jesus and resolving to follow Jesus even when it doesn't make sense. Leaders are meek. As Zach Eswine points out, meekness is not weakness. It's actually stewarding whatever power or influence we do have for the flourishing of others. So Eswine points out how parents will tell Johnny to be gentle with his little brother, not because Johnny is weak, but precisely because Johnny has some elbows and some strength. Leaders are gentle. They're meek. Jairus doesn't get upset with Jesus. Jairus doesn't get upset or flex his influence when this vulnerable woman gets in the way of his prayer request. The patience of Jairus is a remarkable meekness. And I'll finally just say, leaders are expected. Jairus here does not share the groupthink of his closest people who are laughing at Jesus' face. Understandably, as we said. I mean, Jairus, of all people, has every reason to laugh Jesus down. But he doesn't. Instead, he holds on to himself instead of following what everyone else is doing. And more importantly, he holds on to the promises of Jesus, who says, don't be afraid. Simply believe. Follow me. See this. Jairus, in other words, shows us another way. For anybody who has influence, anybody who has authority, Jairus shows us the way of Jesus. It's a downward path. It's a path to his feet. But he's, as I said earlier, he's not alone at the feet of Jesus, because it's there that we also meet an unseen woman. But if Jairus falls down because of his status in society, this unseen woman, what we could say, falls up. Isaiah, the prophet, you might know this text. He said, there'll be a day when every valley shall be raised up and every mountain made low. And I think Jairus here is a mountain who is lowered to Jesus' feet. And I see this unnamed and unseen woman as a valley that's beautifully lifted to the feet of Jesus. She can only fall up, culturally speaking, because she's at the very bottom of this society's caste system. She's a woman in a culture that did not elevate women. She is perpetually and ritually unclean state, as we read. She is likely very poor, and as the text that we heard read states, she spent all of her money on doctors. And we could be on safe ground to assume that those doctors are exploiting her. And so there's a reason that she is very unseen in this text. And friends, there is a reason why she thinks the only way she can approach Jesus is incognito. And from the side. With the lowest possible profile. She's used to being one. So that scholar Joel Green writes, quote, "This is the story of her resolution cross the borders of legitimate behavior to gain access to divine power." So that when Jesus asks, "Who touched me?" close readers of this text understand that this is a very dangerous question to answer, especially if you are this woman, because if she outs herself before this pressing crowd, she is very subject to further alienation. Think about that. Someone who is ritually unclean touching a rabbi and doing so incognito. So this is a very dangerous question. Jesus knows it. It's a very dangerous question that he asks. And yet Jesus asks this question not to shame her, but to vindicate her in the eyes of everybody. He wants everybody to see this tested, courageous, bold, boundary-crossing faith. He wants everybody to see it. So that she can be restored fully, not just before the eyes of God, but restored fully before the eyes of everybody around her. This unseen woman courageously falls up at Jesus' feet. Jairus falls down at Jesus' feet, and Jesus honors her. It's beautiful. What does Jesus do? Well, first with Jairus, he heals. Well, sorry, with this unseen woman, he heals this unseen woman. So then, verse 48, we see, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." Jesus, first of all, sees the unseen. Jesus bestows the name daughter on the unnamed and the unfamilied. And he not only heals her body, but here he restores her to her society. He gives her the most important name, which is daughter. And then he walks on in verse 53 to Jairus' home. As they're laughing at him, knowing that she was dead. Verse 54 says, "But he took her by the hand and said, 'My child, get up.' In her spirit returned, and at once she stood up." And then in one of the most surprising texts of this passage, Jesus told them to give her something to eat. Amazing detail. Her parents were astonished, but he ordered them not to tell anyone what had happened. So what do we have here? We have Jesus pulling Jairus' daughter up by the hand out of death itself and into life. But Jesus does not just give this daughter breath. Jesus gives this daughter a meal. And of course, we know how the story ends with Jesus in the Gospel of Luke. We know the cross, where Jesus does not just put his hand into the realm of death, but he puts his whole self into the realm of death so that he could, in his resurrection, eat with us. Amen? So that he can call you and me daughter and son. Jesus died for all who fall at his feet. Some of you, that fall is very up, and some of you, that fall is very down. But regardless, the ground is level at the feet, the scarred feet of Jesus. And it's there pessimism goes away. It's there false optimism goes away. It's there the faith grows. So let me just close our time with this question. Where are you tempted to laugh Jesus down? Or his messengers? Where are you tempted to laugh at the promises of Jesus? Like, what unique promise, what unique thing does Jesus say or do? What is it that Jesus promises will happen, perhaps when he returns, that you are tempted to laugh at? I just want to say, I'm not here to ridicule that temptation to laugh. This is very real pain behind that temptation. I just recognize that Jesus himself doesn't scold the crowds for laughing. And he would not scold you either. But is it possible that he is inviting you to look at Jairus, or to look at Jairus' wife, or to look at this unseen and unnamed woman, and to say, what would it look like to instead become in that place of, I want to laugh you off? What would happen if we became more expectant, even if it were of resurrection expectant? Because here's the thing, this is a preview of something that will happen when Jesus returns. We aren't promised that what we see in this text will happen to each and every one of us in our lifetime. Jesus has every prerogative to heal miraculously in our life, and we can be expectant of that. But ultimately, friends, our expectation must be rooted in that day when he returns and makes all things new, including our minds and our souls and our hearts. It's as sure as the tomb is empty. It's just a matter of time. So how much more confident can we be the risen Jesus will make us? In this preview, we see Jesus taking death by the hand. We see Jesus saying to desperate people, don't be afraid, just believe. And so how can we feel this kind of expectancy in our own personal essence? What would it look like, in other words, to enter this place of worship? What would it look like to wake up tomorrow morning with this kind of expectancy? A sort of humble expectancy. We don't know, we don't understand, but the safest place is the feet of Jesus.
Thanks for listening in. For more resources like this and to learn more about Hope, please visit our website at hopechurchcolumbus.org.